a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. In other words, a tax on people's income that gradually gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You realize that we were not taxed on our income until the early 1900s in this country, and even then it was only like about 1 or 2% of a person's income, and that's only if they earned a real lot of money. And then now, all of a sudden, just your average working man, lower middle class working man in America, one out of every $2 of his income goes to some form of tax, government taxation, whether it's federal, state, or local taxes. You know, how can we say that we're really free if we don't even determine how we spend half of our money? Another area is, look at how long we have to work just to take care of our families. How can we call ourselves free if we don't even have free time? What good is having freedom of religion if you don't have time to go to church? You know? So, number three, abolition of all right of inheritance. You realize this country was so great that in the early 1900s, you could come here from another country, poor, penniless. If you worked hard, you could more than break even and then leave, you know, a house paid in full to, you know, to your sons and daughters, and then they can do the same, and by the third or fourth generation, you've got millionaires. That's how great, that's why America was called the land of opportunity. But if you destroy, if the government sucks up the inheritance, and that's what we're talking about now, an inheritance tax and all, government sucks up the inheritance, you can break your back trying to make ends meet and get your sons and daughters off to a better start than you had, and in the end they have to start at square one. You know, it's just the chances of becoming wealthy in one generation are very low. In a land of that is truly free, a land of opportunity, two or three hardworking generations, and then you can have a prosperous family. You know, so this is being destroyed. Let's see, number five, centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and exclusive monopoly. That's called the Federal Reserve Bank in America today. The Federal Reserve, non-elected officials, basically private bankers, who determine the interest rates. They can, at will, they can inflate the currency, deflate it, they can cause a recession, they can cause a depression for a private person. You realize how far we have fallen in the 20th century? Before the Depression, people started taking seven-year mortgage loans, and the average American was appalled that somebody would enslave themselves for the next 7 years just for a house. So I guess a guy would say, hey, you know, I graduated high school. I'm the kind of guy who's probably going to get married. So let me work hard for 2 years and set aside enough money so that when I do find a gal who wants to marry me, I'll be able to buy some land and build a house and own the house from the day we walk into it. And now we not only have 30-year mortgages, but people are talking about getting 100-year mortgages, and maybe you can refinance it right before you die and just, you know, leave all that debt to your kids. Because I'm not going to cover all 10. That there, it talks about number four is confiscation of property of all immigrants and rebels. But it's just you know, when the property of drug dealers is being confiscated, we applaud because they really didn't earn that and stuff. But if you just stretch the definition of a criminal, you say, well, Pastor so and so is guilty of a hate crime because he called homosexuality a sin. You know, so then you confiscate his property. I mean, that's what the Nazis did to the Jews. They just said, well, the Jews were subhuman. They're the cause of all our problems. So let's confiscate their businesses, their property, you know, that's one thing that scares me about the war on terrorism. Do we need to fight a war on terrorism? Yes. I don't even think we need to declare war on terrorism. The terrorists have already declared war on us. That's what blowing up buildings are all about. Those are acts of war, unethical wars at that. But the idea that we're going to declare war on terrorism without specifically defining what terrorism is scary. Because, okay, President Bush seems to think that Christians are good guys. But who's to say the next president isn't going to be a guy who thinks that Christians are bad guys? So you can just insert born-again Christians into your definition of terrorist. I mean, Janet Reno, Christians pretty well fit in her definition of terrorist. She had a definition of a terrorist that I was guilty of everything on that list except I didn't store food, and I feel guilty about that. Because, you know, for all we know, the Washington State's going to have an earthquake or a volcano, and I'm not going to be able to provide for my family for 4 or 5 very important days. But I do attend home Bible studies. I do believe in the right to bear arms. I think human beings have the right to protect themselves. You know, if somebody's breaking into your house and you call the police, they might get there in time to break out the chalk and draw an outline of your silhouette on the floor. But 9 out of 10 times, they don't get there in time to get the bad. They get the bad guy after he commits the crime. But, you know, you go right down the list, I believe in the second coming of Christ. These are all on Janet Reno's list of terrorists. And then not once did she didn't even list the killing of innocent people or the destruction of private property just for the purposes of furthering your political agenda. That wasn't even on the list. Yeah, anybody willing to die for their beliefs. I mean, it's like, lady, what's wrong with this picture? And then we saw the application, you know, it was David Koresh messed up. You bet he was messed up. But if you really wanted to save the innocent men, women, and children that were enslaved to his lies, why do you surround the buildings and start a process that led to the slaughter and the death of these people that you're claiming to rescue? I mean, that should have been a police act. You don't have to roll in tanks. You just go out in town, and you do a felony stop on this guy when he's out in town. You can rescue these people. And but you know, we just got this idea. We got to be like the Gestapo. We got to be like the Nazis, rolling the tanks and.
Way better entertainment.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, too, is as long as you pick the right target. And Janet Reno, by the way, had a list. And David Koresh, the Branch Davidians, were number one on that list. Another cult, the Church Universal and Triumphant, was number two. The sad thing is, if we watch the Constitution being thrown aside and military, government military apparatus being used against American citizens to get the bad guys, then what are we going to do when that military apparatus is being used against the good guys? So it's like Michael Reagan, the son of Ronald Reagan, he said, am I the only guy who's worried about tanks rolling down the streets to get American citizens? I thought we'd build those tanks for foreign armies, to defeat foreign armies. And we have to be very careful. See, so one of the problems with American Christian political thinkers today is we're willing to do unconstitutional things for good goals, for temporary fixes. But our Constitution was founded on the eternal, unchanging truths of God's Word when applied to the government and morality. So if we bypass God's eternal truths and come up with a quick fix, okay, it could blow up in our face. Anytime you give government more power, it's a two-edged sword. If you give the government more power to do something good, it could use the other end of that sword to start doing something bad with it as well. And I think looking to the government for solutions in areas where the government, God didn't intend the government to get involved with, very, very dangerous. And I think there ought to be a lot more emphasis. That's why I like Hutcherson so much. He's doing an awful lot of things that the church ought to be doing. And whether it's his goal to do it or not, I don't know. But I think he's making a good case that the church can do a better job than the government does at things like feeding the hungry and handling adoptions of children and things of that sort. And but you know, we're coming out of a century where government has slaughtered more human beings than any other entity, yet we're entering this new century almost worshiping the government, almost believing every problem can be solved by the government. We get bigger and bigger government until we have world government, we'll all live in peace. And it's like, no. Government is the number one killer. So, yeah, there is good government, but that's limited government.
So what happens when someone like Hutchinson gets noted by the government as being a bad person and then everybody wants to see the government shut him down? You know, I mean, that's ultimately what happens.
I think in the ultimate sense, if Nazi Germany... preachers like myself and preachers like Hutcherson were generally pretty safe. Preachers like myself, because I haven't had that big of an impact, I have a small church, only about 50, 60 people show up on Sunday mornings. So with the Nazis, when a guy has a small church, the Nazis figured, well, why arrest that Fernandez character? Because we'll give him more publicity, his church will double in size overnight. Just leave him alone. He's not that big of a factor. But with Hutcherson, the guy with a few thousand people coming to his church and really impacting his community, the danger there is you might tick off. You might set this machinery in motion. And so the Nazis went to arrest a cardinal that would have standing room only, a Catholic cardinal, and he preached against the Nazis. Standing room only, thousands of people would attend his church, I think about 5,000 people. They went to arrest him. And he said, okay, but I just need to get changed. And he went into another room and they were waiting for him. They looked out the window and a couple hundred people were there. You know, word got out. They waited a few more minutes, a couple more hundred people came. Waited a few more minutes, all of a sudden there's thousands of people waiting outside. The cardinal comes out of the back room in his full cardinal garb. You know, it all was red and just the robes and everything, the hat, his staff, you know, sticks out like a sore thumb, even in a big crowd. So the Gestapo agents took one look at the crowd and said, okay, never mind. They never did arrest the guy. Because they really, you know, they bring this guy out. It would have been like the Pharisees arresting Jesus in broad daylight. The people would have tore them to shreds. So basically, you know, today we are being lied to. We're being told that the Christian church was the right-hand man of the Nazis. No. If you read Terrell's work, Resurrecting the Third Reich, the Nazis were neo-pagans, and in Hitler's private correspondence over and over again, he acknowledged both Protestant and Catholic Christians, serious traditional ones, as the biggest thorn in his side. The only reason why Hitler and the Nazis talked about German Christianity and positive Christianity and called themselves Christians was because true Christianity was too strong for them to defeat in a head-on assault. It's as powerful as the Nazis were, they knew they could not defeat it in a head-on assault, so they tried to go a backdoor approach and pretend they were Christians and try to set up a watered-down Christianity. So what they did was, you know, you try to imprison as many of the true preachers and replace them with Nazis, wolves in sheep's clothing, and wimps who claim to be true Christians but bow before the Nazis, and you end up creating a false apostate church that doesn't really believe the Bible. But in reality, Hitler knew the threat that true biblical Christians Or even for that matter, Roman Catholics who just took Roman Catholic and biblical morality seriously, they were too big of a threat. And, you know, tyranny, which is the belief that the government is the highest authority, and belief in a personal God that transcends all human authority, they will never peacefully coexist. I'm not saying Christians will try to overthrow the government, but what I'm saying is tyrannical governments can never tolerate a strong population, a large segment of the population that acknowledge an authority that stands as judge above them, above the governing authorities. So, I mean, it's not that we declare war on them, they declare war on us. We just proclaim the truth. For some people, they just can't handle the truth, and then tyrants fall into that category. Had your hand up?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state, the Federal Department of Communication, Department of Transportation. Another one, the final one I'll touch on, free education for all children in public schools. It sounds real good, but when the state is running the schools, you know, you're going to indoctrinate the children in political correctness. You're not going to have the best wishes of the family and the children at heart. And, you know, the Federal Department of Education is unconstitutional. It's more in line with the Communist Manifesto. Founding fathers were opposed to the federal government getting involved in education. The Bible never intended the government to get involved in education. That was, parents were responsible to bring their children up within God's discipline and instruction. So basically, for the parents and their rabbis or their pastors, their churches, you know, to figure out how can we give our child a good, solid education in the truth. And I think one of the big problems we face is this. Because the church in America has one foot in the world and one foot in the church, because we allow our children to get away with watching MTV, and then we drag them into church, okay? That's what makes it so tough for the kids. That's why the kids don't want to go to Christian schools. They want to be in the public schools with their friends. And they don't want to listen to Christian music. They want to listen to gangster rap or whatever it is. Because, you know, in other words, we allow our kids to take a stroll down Main Street, Sodom and Gomorrah, and then we tell them, okay, now we've got to, you know. And so we were sending mixed signals. And so I think we just created a monster. Now, let me say this. With everything I've said about America and Marx and all, could we say that America is socialistic? By the way, socialism is not the opposite of communism. Socialism, if communism is black, socialism is dark, 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 dark gray. Okay, they're right next to each other, and but could we call America social? You know, I mean, Russia, the communists took over. So what do they call themselves? The USSR. So the socialist. But can we call America socialistic, or at least say America is running full speed ahead in that direction? Not America is not Marxist communist, okay? But it doesn't mean that we're not communistic. There was an Italian guy named Gramsci, and he founded what he called Gramscian communism. He thought that Marx had the right goals, but he, as an Italian, acknowledged something that Marx missed. He thought, you know, Marx, you underestimate religion. And by religion, he meant Roman Catholicism, Roman Catholic form of Christianity, although it applies equally well to European Protestant Christianity. But Gramsci, while in prison for being a revolutionary, realized that religion was too powerful to overthrow. He agreed with Marx, yeah, religion is opium, but it's an opium the people, the workers will never give up. So what he basically said was, Marx, forget it. The workers are not going to revolt. So instead of revolution to speed up the process, we need evolution. We need gradual change rather than a real quick revolution. So we need to infiltrate and use religion, take over religion from within. In Central America, this was called liberation theology, where the communists would come in and they would arrest the true Roman Catholic priests and put communists in their seminaries so that they eventually became the Catholic priests and the Catholic bishops. And then you start preaching that Jesus was the greatest Marxist revolutionary who ever lived. And so you basically gradually take control of religion, the churches, education, the media, art. And in this sense, I think America has fallen prey to Gramsci and communism. I mean, when you look at Dr. Cleon Skousen, he was a former FBI agent. He wrote a book, The Naked Communist. He listed the 45 goals of the Communist Party to take over America from within. Those 45 goals look like the 1980 Democratic Party platform. I mean, they're identical. Everything from trying to abolish the right to bear arms, getting rid of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, you know, just right down the line, promoting homosexuality and other forms of sexual deviancy. It looked like the Democratic platform in the 1980s. The sad thing is, by the year 2000, it seems like the Republican Party, in an attempt to look more compassionate, the Republican Party platform is now starting to look like the 45 goals of the Communist Party to take over America from within. So it's the cancer that has spread and taken over one of our parties is now in the process of taking over larger and larger chunks of the other party. So it's getting to the point where we're going to have the freedom to elect the communist of our choice, just like they did in the old Soviet Union. Whatever the case, we need to acknowledge that the early church was not communistic in Acts 2, 41 to 45. This is compassionate capitalism. But what I mean by capitalism is they had the right to own their own property. Do you realize if God was pro-communist, he could not say, thou shalt not steal? Because there'd be nothing to steal. No one would own property. So compassionate capitalism is when you share what you have with others. It's not the abolition of private property. So basically, the early church was not communistic because God instituted human government to protect man and his property and his God-given rights. God did not institute human government to enslave mankind. So anybody who's arguing for the abolition of private property and that we should go communistic, it's not Christian, it doesn't make sense, and it leads to the bloodshed. By the way, utopia is the dream that man, through his own wisdom and his own power, can bring on the perfect society. A heaven on earth situation without intervention by God. That's what a utopian dream is. Every utopian dream that has ever picked up steam has always led to the slaughter of the multitudes. Okay? In the 20th century, that has meant the slaughter of hundreds of millions of people. In the 21st century, if we continue to go that route, I think we're going that route with the United Nations and all these dreams that we're going to bring peace on the planet Earth, and if we could just get rid of these intolerant Christians and that type of thing, it is going to lead to the slaughter of billions with the technology that we now have. C.S. Lewis's work, The Abolition of Man, and Francis Schaeffer's work, Back to Freedom and Human Dignity, are two works I think that we need to reread in this generation and in this century, because we have so many Christians that are so optimistic about the future. And keep in mind, I'm optimistic about the future because I know my King will come back. He will reign over the nations. He will bring peace and righteousness and justice to the planet Earth. But before that, all hell is literally going to break loose on the planet Earth, and things are looking ugly. Things are moving in that direction. If Western culture does not repent and turn back to the God of the Bible, all hell is going to break loose on the planet Earth. But we've got some people who are thinking, no, it's going to be great. The turn of the 20th century, people were saying, we had Christian thinkers saying that man accepting evolution and teaching that we had evolved past wars. So then World War I came, so we said, okay, that's the war to end all wars. Then World War II came. We should have learned our lessons. Hopefully we don't need World War III before we wake up.
In November 2001, the European Commission signed a treaty with the World Bank, and the description of it, the reason why, was poverty.
Right now, see, we have, it used to be that, with the Council of Foreign Relations, organizations like that, think tanks in America and then the Royal Institute in Great Britain, will come right out and argue for world government, and they refer to it as the New World Order. They talk about global government. But too many freedom-loving Americans would object and cry foul. And they realized, hey, we can talk about world government, but let's not use the phrase world government. Too many people get upset. So now what we talk about is a world bank, a one-world economy, and they're ready to go into the euro dollar in Europe. By the way, this is the first time Europe has been unified in one union since the old Roman Empire collapsed, which has a lot of prophetic significance. But now we're doing that here. We're talking about possibly a one currency between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Okay? But anyway, we got a World Bank. We're also talking about we have international laws now. We have an international criminal court. And by the way, these guys, the United Nations, China, is viewed as the protector of human rights, and America is viewed as a violator of human rights. What's wrong with this picture? So if you have international laws, and you're moving towards a one-world economy, and then through the United Religions Initiative of Bishop Swing and Robert Mueller, they want the United Religions Organization, which would be, for a religion, the equivalent of a United Nations, what a United Nations is for nations. So we're moving towards a one-world religion with international laws, international economy, a one-world, a global economy, and then a UN peacekeeping force, a one-world military. I mean, if you've got the military, and you've got the laws, and you've got control of the economy and the religion, and it's all done on the international level, it supersedes the sovereignty of all nations, you're moving in the direction. Well, your goal is a one-world government. And it just shocks me that guys who call themselves conservatives, like Rush Limbaugh and Michael Medved, all the good that they're doing, they still don't want to call it what it is. And so when a Christian calls up and says, hey, doesn't it look like we're moving towards a one-world government, they call us conspiracy nuts. So I appreciate Spiritual Counterfeits Project with Tal Brook out of Northern California and the work that they're doing, because Tal Brook was the leading Western disciple of Sai Baba, one of the leading gurus from India, and he saw the power of the demonic realm unleashed before he converted to Christianity. And so Tal Brook, when he sees a meditation room in the United Nations building run by higher-up occultists and New Agers, he knows what's coming down. And so the Spiritual Counterfeits Project, they've got some really good information there.
Like right around the 9/11 thing, they had a thing about that they pretty much covered up with the 9/11 thing. The United Nations said that they took their first step into family as far as saying that you should no longer strike your children. You cannot spank your children.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, well, what that leads to is people losing control of their children, so therefore they can turn them over to the government because they no longer have control anymore.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that with terrorism, one of the problems with terrorism, I can show you articles by globalists before 9/11 arguing that since terrorism occurs on an international scale, the only way to combat it is through international laws and international government. And believe me, the United States is powerful enough to go anywhere it wants on this globe and to get the bad guys who hurt or killed our people. We do not need the help of the UN. In fact, anything the United States can militarily do in one day will take 4 or 5 days if we do it under the title of the UN and fly the UN flag. So number one, they just get in the way. Number two, why should we shed American blood in the name of the UN? And the UN is given... The United Nations has led to as communist overthrows of so many different countries, just as the World Council of Churches, which is pro-UN, has done. So it's just horrible. Let's take a break, and then we need to talk a little bit about Friedrich Nietzsche and nihilism, Jean-Paul Sartre and existentialism, and then secular humanism. I don't know if we're going to even have time to talk about evil and human suffering, and creation versus evolution this week. Might have to push it off to next week, which scares me because we've got things to cover next week. But whatever the case, just take a 15-minute break, and then we'll move on from there.